Before this, when you were not working, as the kids were getting older, did you get involved in school activities of theirs or community groups of any kind?
I used to belong to the PTA there when they were in school, you know, and I used to go to the meetings and stuff like that, but not too much, you know. I don't know, just I like I say, I wasn't too much on the social deal. I was mostly at home all the time.
Now, when the son who went into the seminary, he was the one who had the heart condition. And when was it that he had the surgery?
Well, he had it when he was about 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
He had that. The surgery was done before he went into the seminary.
Uh-huh.
And that was, they were a little bit rough. When he first got out of the hospital, he was going to Garfield School.
Uh-huh.
And he was 9 years old. So then there were a lot of little rough boys up there. And one time they pushed him down the stairway. And I was so, all of us, after his operation, we were all so careful, you know. We were so afraid that something was going to happen to him. So then he decided he wanted to go to Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the four of them in Catholic school. But the three rebelled and said, no, we're not going to Catholic school. And he said, yeah, but I want to go. But I wanted them to go because all of them, because I wanted them to take care of him, because he had to cross the street, Colorado Boulevard, and there was quite a bit of traffic in there. And they said, nope. So he started going by himself because he wanted to go to Catholic school. That was his main object. You know, that's why I said, well, you guys are going to have to go with him because he wants to go. So that was why how it happened. But he got better. He took care of himself. Mm-hmm. He started going.
Now, what was the surgery that he had exactly?
He had a hole in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And they patched it. They took an artery from his arm some way or other. Anyway, they prolonged his life. They told me that if he didn't have that operation when he was about 14 years old or so, he would die in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever he was going to die because there was no cure. So finally then some doctors came around and then they started checking on him and they got it to where he would be operated on.
Where was the operation done?
In the children's hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, it was like a miracle. I was working and then these doctors came. He was just a little boy yet. He was going to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw him. That he had his lips purple. Well, he always had his lips like that in his ears. So they thought that they sent him 2-3 times to the bathroom to wash his mouth because they thought that he was sucking the ink of his pants. He had a little bib pair of blue pants and they thought that was it, but it wasn't. So then they discovered that he had this murmur and they were ready to put him out of school and all that. And then the kindergarten teacher came to see me and she objected. She said, no, they cannot do that to him. We don't want to make an invalid. He says, but the school wants to do it. So what they do, he would come out on rest area and just sit on the sand pile. And that's all he couldn't do nothing. He couldn't do in the play or anything. So then this lady, this teacher, she had some friends that were doctors. So she talked to them and then it so happened that they came, there was a survey that I had never heard before of such a thing, but there was a survey that they went to school checking on children that had sicknesses. So the first thing they did, they went right straight to my boy. So then they seen him, and then they came to my house when I got out of work. They were there, and they told me what he had and that they wanted to check him. So then they start checking him there in Pasadena in the offices of the doctors there after hours.
Mm-hmm.
They would go in and I would take him and they would check him. So this went on for about probably 6 months. And then they said that he had a chance. He says, we're going to start checking him now at the general hospital. So then this nurse would come and pick me up and the clinic would be filled like that, children, you know, sick. And here I'd walk with this nurse right into the area there, you know, just if I was a big cheese or something. And it was amazing. To me, you know, it was something great. So they would check him, and they checked him, and they checked him for about a year or so. Then they told me that they were going to operate on him. He says, but we're not going to do it. He says, we're going to send him to the children's hospital. Mm-hmm. So then the Rotary Club, they all arranged that. I didn't know no Rotary Club. I didn't know anything like that. So they arranged it. So the Rotary Club, a man from the Rotary Club would come and pick me up whenever I had the appointment at the hospital. They'd come and pick me up, take me to the hospital with my boy, come back and pick me up and bring me home.
And you were working at this point?
No, I wasn't working at that time. So there it was, you know. Then when the time came, they told me that he was going to be operated, because that took several months too. So when the time came that he was going to be operated, they said, you don't have to worry about anything. He says, the Rotary Club and the community chest is paying everything. He says, all we want is your consent. So, gosh, well, I never thought that anything like that would happen. So then there was a problem in the family, my husband's family. They didn't want to. My husband didn't want to.
Didn't want him to have surgery?
Mm-mm. And I said, he's going to have that chance.
Why did they object?
Because they said that he was going to die and they're going to kill him and stuff like that. So I said, if he's going to die, I want him dead now, then later. I said, I'm gonna give my consent. I don't care if you don't give your consent for him. And his family were kind of mean with me. They said that I was taking him to be slaughtered and stuff like that. So I said, well, I don't care. I said, I'm going to give him a chance. I said, I cannot see him in the face when he gets older and say, Mother, I had a chance and you never gave it to me. I said, if God wants to take him away from me, he can take him now. I said, I'd rather have him now than later. So finally my husband gave in, but he wasn't too willing. But he gave in because I stood firm. So then they operate on him, and they prolong his life. Like I say, he lived to get married. He was about 19 when he got married. Mm-hmm. Then later, they gave him open heart surgery, but she didn't come out of it. Well, he had too much problems. He had pneumonia, and he had a lot of things. You know, he was very worn out. They did a lot of things with him. So finally, let's see, what was it, a month later or 2 months later, when he had open surgery, they took him in to undo what they had done when he was a young boy. Wow. And they were working on his lungs, and his lungs collapsed, and he died.
And by that time he was in his...
28.
His life was prolonged.
Yeah, he was prolonged. He was prolonged.
Your husband ever attribute blame because you were working that he was sick?
No. No, because he was born like that. Mm-hmm. He was born with a murmur in his heart. Mm-hmm. Why? How?
Mm-hmm.
Never know those things.
So he, by the time in 1950, when you first wrote Lockheed, he was at home. He'd already had the first surgery.
The first surgery.
As a young boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at that point, both of them were home, the boy and the girl, when you went to work.
Yeah, when I went to work to Lockheed, I had the two already. Because
let me ask you, before that, when you went to work in the shoe place, and then when you went to work in the theaters, how much money did you make there compared to what you were making during the war years?
Well, I made better.
You made better
in the theaters. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I made better at the shoe factory. I don't remember. I didn't make very much.
Uh-huh. And did you do the same thing? You kept this money as your money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just like that.
Now, how did you get the idea of writing to Lockheed in 1950?
Well, because I wasn't satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't satisfied. You know, I felt myself alone, and I said, I can't do this. You know, I can't stay here.
Mm-hmm.
Being that I had already, you know, been out. That was the main reason. So then I said, I can't be here. I said, and then when my daughter left, you know, she got married, and then the boy. So I said, no. Nah. And then Gina was talking about getting into the seminary and going into the seminary. So I went to work.
And so you wrote them first in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that we're not hiring women right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wrote again in 51.
51.
And then what happened? You say they sent you a telegram.
They sent me a telegram right away when they received my letter. They sent a telegram to report to work.
And that was to Burbank,
though? Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that feel about going to
Burbank? I looked for a ride, and that's how I started, because I didn't know how to drive.
Mm-hmm.
I looked for a ride, and I started riding with people there from Pasadena.
So you were still living in the same place in Pasadena?
Yeah, I didn't move from Pasadena till I lived in that house for about 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, because I moved there right after Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I left it in 52, 52, 53, that's when I moved from out of that house. Then I got this, to the office, as you know, at the, mm-hmm. they have, they give you a list of mm-hmm. rides and stuff. That's how I got mm-hmm.
What happened when you went out to Burbank the first time then? You went out there to apply?
Uh-huh. I went to the office already, you know, and then I had my paperwork and everything that they, because they told me, just come in and report.
Mm-hmm.
And right away they fixed out my, got my information that they wanted, and I got my pass and everything.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think, what were you told that you were going to be doing?
Riveting.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. How much pay were you going to start at?
I think I started at $1.65 or something like that.
So a dollar more than when you started
in
the war.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
And you were classified as a riveter?
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. What was it like then going in the first day there? Because this was a very different setup again.
It was nice. It was different. It wasn't like it was before because I already knew a little of it. See, so it wasn't as hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working 2 months. I've been there when they told me that being that I was new, I had to either go on nights or I'd be laid off. So I told them, I'll go on nights.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on nights most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
How did your husband react to you going on nights?
Can't say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked nights. And by that time, like my kids were bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to leave food already made and everything, you know. And they used to prepare the kitchen and everything.
So you would work. Was it graveyard shift then? You worked midnight to 7 a.m.
No, I worked on 4 o'clock.
Oh, the swing shift.
To 12:30.
Now, what did you do when you first started back again? What part were you working on? What was that?
Riveting. Riveting. I did riveting for several years.
And what section were you working on?
We were working on the T-33 and the side panels, the T-33.
And then you would have a much larger group of people working together than when you were doing the elevators.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How did you feel about the workplace, because that also was so much bigger and everything was on such a bigger scale at Burbank compared to how
yeah.
did that all strike you?
Well, we started on the cotton shed, they call it cotton shed, but it's a smaller building, so it wasn't too bad. Then later they transferred us to the other building, the bigger building, but it was all right. I didn't I was among all the people, you know. And,
How many women were there at that point? And what percentage of the workers around you were women, would you say?
I don't know. There was quite a bit of women.
Was it as much as half or not that much?
Probably.
And were they women who were new, or were they women who worked during the war, too?
Well, I don't know. Some of them had worked during the war, because...
Mm-hmm.
When I retired, before I retired, I knew some that had been there since the war.
Mm.
A few, you know,
mm-hmm.
not too many. But I don't know. I guess there must have been quite a few.
Mm. Now, once you started working again out at Lockheed, how did your life at home change? You've had 3 kids that were about to leave, or 2 left and one
yeah.
more leaving. How
well,
would you and your husband spend your time then?
Well, the same as usual, you know. He was, by that time, he was kind of sick.
Mm.
He was sick, and he... So then, right after that, wasn't too long after that he died.
Yeah, what was wrong with him?
He had heart trouble, and he had liver trouble or something, I don't
mm.
know.
And how did you feel if he was getting sick? Did you think this was it?
Well, no, I didn't think it was it, but he was so sick and so stubborn, he wouldn't go to the doctors and he wouldn't do nothing. So it made it kind of hard for me, like I used to tell him. I said, you make it rough on me because I'm working and here you get so sick, and I would have to get up in the morning and go help him on his job. And then,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I would have to go help him in the morning and then come home and get ready and go up to my own. So I used to tell him, I said, it's pretty rough, you know, but he wouldn't pay attention. He wouldn't take care of himself.
Mm-hmm.
So finally in early 53, he died.
And was that sudden then? Or was he home? Or
he went to the hospital and he died.
Mm-hmm. And how did that affect you then?
Well, it affected me pretty bad because I was left alone. Gina was already in the seminary. I just had Julie with me. And I didn't know just what the heck I was going to do. So then what I did, I moved to the valley to be closer to my job.
In the Burbank area?
In the Burbank area. So then after that, I married my lead man, a lead person.
And Julia was how old when you moved to the valley?
She was about 15.
Was that a problem for her making that move?
No, she had a boyfriend and she was talking about getting married as soon as her father died.
Oh.
She said she was going to get married, and she had gone up there to the hospital and took the boyfriend up there, and wanted him to meet the boyfriend, but he wouldn't think of it. He didn't want to.
Mm.
And up to this day, you know, Peter, my son-in-law, he says, boy, he says, Julie's father never wanted to see me. He never wanted to know who I was. Mm. But, you know, it was kind of bad for him to do that because he was dying.
Yeah.
He should have been a little bit, you know, kinder.
Well, that must have been very difficult for you because here he was dying and now your last child was about to leave.
Mm-hmm. So then, like I say, I got up here to the valley, and then after he died, she got married.
Mm-hmm.
So I was left alone. So then when I was left alone, I married the lead man.
How did you feel about being alone then? That was the first time since you were what? Ever.
Ever. You see, that's why I guess I don't like to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I couldn't live in this house alone.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe that's why I'm like that. So when this happened, I married the lead man, and then I told the lead man, I said, I've always wanted to buy a house. I said, I never could buy a house because Julia never wanted one.
Mm-hmm.
He always would say that he was going to die and that he would leave me in a very well position and that wasn't right and all that stuff. And I used to tell him, oh, you're silly. I said, buy one house because property was cheap at that time. I wanted him to buy a house for each kid.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so that the kids can have their home, and we could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was making the little money that I was making, and he was making some, so we could have done it. Things were not that expensive. But no, he wouldn't hear of it. So then when he died, when I married Jones,
mm-hmm.
then he says, well, go buy a house.
Now, Jones would be the first Anglo man that you had dated or been around at all. Were you dating before you met him?
He was my lead person at the job.
Now, how did that come about that you started dating him then?
Well, after my husband died, I started dating him.
Mm-hmm. And what was he like?
Well, he was all right.
What was his background?
He had kids in Kentucky. He had three kids up there.
Mm-hmm.
And a wife that even though he was divorced, she couldn't leave him alone. She could ride and ride and ride and ride all the time. So finally, in 67 or something, his daughter came, and she was pregnant. And he thought that he was the only man in the world that had a pregnant daughter or something. And he wanted out. He said that he wanted out because he wanted to be with his daughter all the time. I said, your daughter's not going to be with you forever. I said, you're mistaken. So he wanted out, and so we had arguments and everything. So So I said, go.
Now that, so you were married for about 10 years though?
No, I've been married 14 years with him.
Oh, now tell me, when you, because up until this time, most of your friends were really from your family, through your family.
Yeah,
and
well,
then the friends
all them friends that I had before, mm-hmm. when my husband died and I moved to the valley, they disappeared too. I never saw them again, or they never tried to get in touch with me or anything. So I figured, well.
So your life really changed very rapidly.
Oh, it changed completely from day to night, because mm-hmm. Jones, then the first thing he did was show me how to drive a car, because I didn't know how to drive one, and he said, no, you have to learn, because you need to have a car to get yourself places, to get to work and all that. I said, yeah. So then that was the first thing he did, which I am very glad of what he did for me.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate all that he did, because then he took me to a lot of places. He showed me how to do fishing. He showed me how to go camping, stuff that I never had done in my life. And all that stuff I love, but he taught me how to do all that. And even my daughter, my oldest daughter, she says, well, she says, that's one thing that we can thank Frank. He says, because he got you out of that, that you didn't know anything. He says, now at least you know how to get yourself to places, mm-hmm. how you can get around, which you didn't. He says, because you didn't know how to drive a car, you didn't know nothing. And he took me a lot of places. We went here in California, I think we went everywhere. And we went on vacation times. We got along very well.
Mm-hmm.
We got along very well. But he resented my kids.
Mm.
At the time that I fell for him and married him, because I fell in love with him. And I was crazy about him. And I didn't realize that he resented them.
Why was that?
I don't know. My kids never did anything with him. They weren't here. He wasn't supporting them. I wasn't giving them nothing. So when I was here, then that I was married, then Gino got out of the seminary, because they told him that his heart was being that he had a heart trouble, that they didn't want to take that responsibility. They were just going to put him through high school, and then he would have to get out. So he says, no, if they're going to do that, I'd rather get out right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he came here to and went to high school here in San Fernando. And then when he was 19, he graduated, and then when he was 19, he got married.
So he lived with you?
He lived with me just for a while, not very long. And at that time, he was getting his little Social Security check mm-hmm. from his father, and that was helping him, you know, and I was working. So there was no reason why Frank should have been didn't like the kids. I don't know why he resented them,
mm-hmm.
but he did. So then when his daughter came, you know, it really came out, you know, he said he didn't care for me anymore and that he wanted out. When he told me that, I said, well, that's okay. No more. I said, that's it.
Now, did your life then start revolving around his friends?
We didn't have friends.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have friends. We had friends from work, you know, just acquaintance.
Mm-hmm.
But all the things we did them alone, just him and I.
Mm-hmm.
We went camping, we went Vegas, we went everywhere, but we went alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like I say, we got along perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden something got into him. Well, I think that the first thing that he thought he was great. Then he started tasting the supervision. And when he started tasting supervision at Lockheed, he thought he was too great, and that I was nothing, you know, he was better than me.
Oh, he moved up from Lee to
mm-hmm.
into higher supervision?
Yeah. So when we had divorced, he was a supervisor. So he just thought that I was, you know, lower than him, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, well, I'm not too good for you. I said, that's it.
Did he ever object to your continuing to work after you got married?
Mm-mm.
And what did you do about your checks? Did you handle them separately?
No, we used them all in here,
mm-hmm.
in the house, you know, everything was.
Now, how did you handle buying the house? Did you buy that together then? Did you each put up money? Or
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a little bit of money that I had from Julia that had died, you know, and they give you a lump sum from the Social Security. I had a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, We put that, and then he put some more in the water or something, and that's how we got the house.
So, but you did put up some of the money for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just his.
Yeah.
Now, what happened after you, by the time you married him, you were still riveting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I was still working.
How did that affect things at work? Was he still your lead man after you were married?
No. After we were married, he changed. You know, he went into supervision, and then he went to another plant, and there was changes for him. So he wasn't